Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, and welcome to A Fine Time for Healing, a sanctuary for your emotional well-being. Your host is Randy Fine, author of the memoir Finally, and the inspirational self-help book Awaken from Life. Here's Randy.
Good morning. Thank you for tuning in to listen to A Fine Time for Healing. I am your talk radio show host, Randy Fine. Today we are going to be talking about bullying with expert Jill Ammon Vanderwood. But, you know, I wanted to tell you first, I have a very intimate experience with this, and it was pretty horrible going through this. My son was very small. Probably because we are vegetarians. He never had any artificial hormones in his diet or whatever. So when he was in seventh grade, he was really small compared to a lot of the other boys. He has since caught up. Believe me, he has caught up. But at the time, he was really small. And he used to go to this teen center in the neighborhood. And they had this room where they had all computers up there, and the kids used to go up there and email and instant message and things like that. And so he would go there and do that. And I think on one particular night, the only thing we can figure is that he must have not signed out, because someone signed in to his account or signed on to his account and began instant messaging all the boys in school that were sort of in the same group with him, with his name, and bad-mouthing all of them to each other. And when he got to school the next day, the bullying began, and it progressed to the point where it was on the bus. And there was a ringleader, a boy who was also in the neighborhood, and the boy was the school, the guidance counselor's peer mediator. So he was one of these boys that had one face to the adults and another face to the kids. But it got to the point where my son's life was absolutely miserable, and he was getting very angry. They were calling him fag and queer and singing, making up songs about him, and it was absolutely horrible. And I approached the principal with it, and they actually brought in this boy who was the ringleader, this peer mediator, and my son was the one that got accused. So I got very upset, couldn't get anything done. One night my son went to this teen center, and all of a sudden he was confronted with somebody who wanted to beat him up, and all the kids were standing around him. And I said to my husband, he's going to be the one to get in trouble because the anger is just welling up inside of him, and he's going to act out, and he's going to be the one to get in trouble. So we pulled him out of there, and we put him in private school. We didn't even tell the school that we were pulling him out, and school year started eighth grade, and they never even called to see where he was. So it just was a really bad time. He's 24 now, so this was several years ago, and I'm hoping that things have changed in the school system. But at the time, it was a mother's worst nightmare. So today we are talking with expert Jill Vanderwood, who has written the book, Erase the Problem of Bullying. And Jill Vanderwood is the award-winning author of 8 books. Her books have won the Indie Excellence Award, Gold and Silver Quill from the League of Utah Writers, USA Best Book Award, and the National Mom's Choice Award. And so she is here today to tell us about her wonderful book, and we're going to discuss this topic. So let me introduce you to her. Good morning, Jill. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. Thanks.
Good. Thank you for being my guest today. And as you could hear, this is a topic that is near and dear to my heart. So when I heard about you and your book, I definitely wanted to open up the discussion about this topic. So thank you very much for being my guest today.
I'm glad to be here.
Thank you. Why don't we start off by talking about how you would define bullying, and what's different about that than, you know, harassment, or how do we know that it's actual bullying?
Well, the definition of bullying is an imbalance of power. So if it's your kid against a lot of other kids, there's an imbalance because it's just one against a whole bunch of people. Or if there's a child has a disability of some kind and the other person that's picking on them is not disabled, or anywhere there's an imbalance. Or maybe the kid that's picking on them is bigger than them. And then harassment would be where maybe it's racial, they're using racial slurs or something like that, then you know that they're picking on the one aspect of that person. And then maybe if it's a gay person, they're using gay slurs. And so that's harassment. And then discrimination would be where they were left out of something because of a certain reason. They've been discriminated. Say a black person is not selected for a sport because of their color. That would be discrimination.
Okay. Well, that definitely clears it up. But they all kind of feel the same, don't they, to the person who's being harassed, discriminated, or bullied, right?
Yes, yes. But the person that's being harassed or discriminated against, that could actually be a legal matter. Or if there's been, like, somebody's been injured, that's a legal matter.
Okay. Okay, I get it. And bullying at this point is not necessarily, it kind of falls through the cracks, doesn't it, Jill?
Well, not lately. I mean, I think there's a lot more awareness of it now than there ever has been. So each school is supposed to have their own anti-bullying policy. It doesn't mean that they're going by it, because one time I had a grandchild that was being bullied at school, and we went to the teacher and then the principal. It didn't help, because they didn't do anything about it.
Right. And I know that I went so far as to write state delegates. I wrote everyone, and they would write letters to the principal, and she'd say, "We have it under control." So so I was very, very frustrated. And, you know, fortunately, I was able to pull him out and put him somewhere else, where it was a smaller group, and in private school, they're not as tolerant of bullying as they are in public school. So I don't have a really good opinion of public school for that reason. I don't think they protect the children as well. But that's neither here nor there. Can you tell us your story about what happened to you when you were younger that caused you to be really have a heightened sense of awareness about this?
Well, when I was in the fifth grade, I moved from the country to the city, and I didn't know the kids in the school very well, and I didn't realize that they had been in school together since kindergarten, and they were really, you know, close, cliquey. And so one day I told on a boy for stealing my eraser, and I heard the other boys saying, "We're going to get her back." And I didn't know what that meant at the time, but everything that they did was against me. They were always throwing things at me and calling me names. Some boys would spit in my hair. There was just all kinds of crazy stuff going on. So the girls in the class decided that they were going to get the boys back. So they decided to elect me the class president. And because there were more girls in the class than boys, I was the president all of a sudden. And the shy little girl got up in front of the whole class, and the boys were yelling things at me and laughing at me. And I was just standing there, and I couldn't call anything to order. So I just said, I resign, and sat back down. And then another time, one boy brought a gas mask to school because his friend had to sit next to me in class. And so this boy sat next to me wearing a gas mask, which I thought looked really funny. But later on, I started thinking, you know, this is really offensive.
And your teacher had to have seen that. She did nothing?
My teacher didn't do anything. What happened that year was that the teacher was out having a baby, and we were having a lot of substitutes. So the substitutes didn't know what was going on, and they must have just turned a blind eye towards it. And then my parents, I told them once, and because the boys, the brothers of these boys were bullying my sister because of me, and she was blaming me because she was being bullied. And we talked to our parents about it, and they said, you just need to get along with people better. And they didn't do
right. Anything. There just wasn't this awareness. And years ago, our parents didn't advocate for us the way we advocate for our children these days. Our parents didn't go to school and, you know, and stand up for us and everything. We were kind of on our own. So, because I know that was the situation with me. I was bullied in middle school, and it was the same situation. My mother was powerless. She couldn't do anything about it. So there, in your book, you have several stories of others who have been bullied, and some very notable people, and other people who have really progressed in life as a result of this, or I should say despite it. And Cedric Dean, I think he is the one who is in prison, who has done a whole lot of work with bullying. He said in your book that we must make it easier for students to make anonymous reports of bullying at schools, like community hotlines. Are we seeing community hotlines cropping up in cities now?
I haven't seen them, but I know that states have anti-bullying laws, so I'm sure this is starting to happen. I just haven't seen it.
Okay. So basically, kids are... There really hasn't been a whole lot of progress in this, because if the schools have changed their rules but they're not enforcing them, then kids are still subject to this, right?
Yes.
And if the kids don't want to get caught in school, then they begin the cyberbullying, where that is a place where it's neither here nor there. It's not home. It's not school. How do you account for that? So what's going on with cyberbullying?
Well, cyberbullying is where they hide behind their cell phones or a computer, and they can be doing that at school, or, you know, like your son was bullied in the community center, and they can be doing that anonymously sometimes, or they can even get on someone else's Facebook and leave comments. And what happens is that they're doing this to the child, and then everyone's agreeing, like, one girl had a comment saying, we all hate Cindy, and she's so stupid. Well, then after that, Cindy got all these likes, 300 likes. People like that they hate Cindy. And so that hurts that person really deeply. Well, there are ways to find out who is sending these messages, and also states have laws about cyberbullying as well. So you can't really be anonymous and leave comments. And if you are liking someone's status that says they hate somebody or this person, something bad about the person, you're a bully too. So all those kids were bullies to your son.
Right, absolutely. There's a ringleader usually, I would imagine. But, you know, in Frank DeLillo or DeLillo, I don't know how you pronounce that, in his story, he said, I believe 99.99% of bullies have some history of being bullied at home or school. Bullying isn't only between two people. There's always a third party involved. So not all these kids are experiencing this, but generally, isn't it one child that is coming from a place like this or a situation like this?
The one, you mean the one that is being bullied or the one that is...
The ringleader.
The ringleader. Well, in his case, he became a bully, and he didn't even realize it until he was older. And then he started working with kids that were bullied, and he realized that he had been a bully. And he was being bullied at home. So his dad had a game where he would punch him in the arm, and he would punch him until he would cry. But he said if he didn't cry, he would get a turn to punch his dad. But it never happened. He never got a chance to punch his dad because he always cried. So then he took that to school with him, and he started punching kids in the arms. And he even had another boy saying, punch him harder. Punch him because he has blue eyes, you know, and
aww,
kept going like that. So he realized that the bullying started in his home.
Well, and I would imagine, I mean, this child that was the ringleader in my son's case, his parents were both, I guess they were really in denial because apparently this child, a lot of people were afraid to go to his house because he had weapons in his room. And on one occasion, the kids, my son was not involved in this because this was already after it had all started, but the kids were all playing like a friendly football game. And this kid shot his brother with a BB gun from behind a bush. You know, this kid was dangerous, and his parents just didn't want to do anything about it. So obviously there was something going on in that home that caused him to be violent in the way that he was, but also to know how to cover it up so well. If a child is being bullied in school, what can they do?
They need to tell somebody. They need to tell somebody because if sometimes kids are afraid their parents are going to get involved, so they don't tell anyone. But the only way that things can start getting better is if they tell somebody because they're powerless to change it on their own. And in a lot of cases like yours, they do have to take them out of the school if it gets that bad. And sometimes parents even have to pull them out and do homeschooling.
Right. So parents need to be very, very, very proactive on these kind of things. And I think, you know, like my concern was, like I said in the beginning of the show, that it's, you know, The rule in school has always been the person who starts it or the person that hits first, okay? So bullies can bully with their mouth, but they can provoke a child to the point where he wants to or she wants to actually lash out and hit. And it's at that point that they become the perpetrator, not the victim. So, you know, I think that's really where it gets so scary because I saw that anger welling up in my child, and he's like, I'm going to do something, I'm going to get him back. And when I heard that, I thought, great. He's going to be the one that's obvious, and it's going to make it all look like it's his fault, like everybody is saying. So kids are in a really, really hard predicament there, and parents really need to listen to their children and understand what's going on in those schools so they can react properly and not hide behind, you know, not believe the teachers and the principals and all those who are saying, we've got it under control, right, Jill?
Yes, they don't have it under control if it's still happening. And sometimes the cyberbullying can be done at school, so that can be under the school's jurisdiction as well. And sometimes when cyberbullying is done at home, sometimes the states will rule in favor of the school can discipline them, and sometimes they will rule the other way. And they've had a legislation trying to go through the Supreme Court to rule on cyberbullying, but now it's been left up to the states. So each state might handle that a little bit differently, but it is a legal matter in a lot of cases.
Well, yes, it's a legal matter, but there's a fine line there because I know that my daughter had a situation where she was beat up in school. I had things with both of my kids, but hers was just an isolated incident where a group of bad girls had gotten in a fight in the hallway and they got suspended. But one of their friends didn't happen to be in the fight, and she was jealous that they got suspended. So she wanted to get suspended. So she plotted. She made a list of all the good girls that were not in her other classes, because these good girls were all smart kids and were all in, you know, AP classes and things like that. But the one class she had with them was chorus, and my daughter was chosen. And in the middle of the chorus class, in front of the teacher, she began punching her in the face. The school never told me about it. But the point that I want to make with this, rather than go into the whole story, is that we were at an impasse, because we could either make a police report, and if we made a police report, we had to press charges, or not, and handle it ourselves. Now, if we pressed charges, she could have been targeted even worse, so she could have been in danger. And we came to find out that this girl's father was in prison, so we didn't know the kind of family that we were dealing with. We did not press charges because we didn't want retaliation that was worse than what it already was. So we had to handle it ourselves. And I just pulled no punches with the school, and I pulled my daughter out, and I said, when you're ready to do what I've asked you to do, just give me a call, and I'll bring my daughter back in. And that sort of motivated them to get her back to school. But yes, it's a difficult call whether or not you actually do want to press charges against these people, because it can make it worse for your child. Have you seen this, or how do you feel about that?
Yes, my granddaughter Savannah was cyberbullied. And what happened was we wrote a book together, and it was about staying away from drugs. And she was in an anti-drug group, but the group started doing things that she didn't agree with, like they were stealing and doing things like that. So she decided to leave this group, and because of that, they started bullying her online. And then everywhere she went, she had these people. They were calling on the phone and threatening to kill her. They were threatening on Twitter. They said if she had Twitter, then she would have already killed herself, because so many people had threatened her, and she did have Twitter, and she was seeing these comments. So anyway, she was out in public, and she was at a concert, and a lot of these kids were there, and someone was helping her by letting her sell water and stay out of sight of everybody. But when she went to leave the concert, somebody pushed her from behind and pushed her down 12 cement steps.
Oh, my gosh.
And she landed on somebody's feet. Otherwise, she would have been injured severely, but she had a concussion. So we pressed charges on these people. We went to court. Well, they went to court without her, we think, because they kept, the police kept putting it off, and then finally, we know it went to court, and they asked her what she wanted to do, and she said she wanted restitution. She didn't get it. And the one witness that saw this backed out. So the girl kept calling her on the phone saying, yes, you were injured. We did this to you, but everybody's on our side, and I'm lying to the police, and I'm going to get away with this. So we did press charges. And then after that, another girl at another event came up and beat her up from behind, and that started all over again. And we didn't even know who the girl was, but her sister saw that girl, and we looked through the Facebook pages and found her and did another report again. So it was getting bad still, but the retaliation did stop, because when somebody called her on the phone saying, "I'm going to kill you and your grandmother and your stupid mother," and she said, "Okay, you know where I live? Come and do it. And if you don't, I'm not going to believe anything you say again." And that's because she stood up to them.
Wow. Wow. Very brave. That was very brave of her, but I guess she had had enough.
Yeah, and she's only 5 foot tall. She's a little tiny blonde girl, but she knows how to stand up for herself, and she did not let these people destroy her. And she says, they really hate me now because I'm doing something with my life and they're not.
Right, right. Yeah, that's the best part of it. I mean, my son now he's about 5'9", but he's very muscular. He works out. He's a big guy, you know. You wouldn't want to see him in an alley. And he's going to be a doctor, you know. And so, right? You know, it makes them stronger. It really does. But I just feel for these children. It's such a vulnerable time of life for them when they really want to fit in, to not be able to fit in. That's just so sad, and it's still going on, and I feel terrible for that. What are some of the things, now your granddaughter handled that really, really well. What are some of the things that a child can do when they are confronted with this to sort of, you know, tamp it down, calm it down? What can they do?
Well, we have a chapter that has solutions, and one of the people that wrote a story is about standing up and asking them, "Why are you angry with me?" Instead of reacting, talk to them and, "Did I do something to offend you?" Sometimes you can't do this, but he says that you can turn your bully into a buddy and you can become friends with them. And so that chapter might be really interesting to some people. And he's written a book called Bullies to Buddies. His name is Izzy Kelman. And he says that that's how he taught kids to stand up to the bully. "Did I do something to offend you?" "Well, yes." Or say they're making fun of your mother drives a garbage truck. And you say, if you say, "I do not, we do not buy our groceries from the dumpster, and we do not do this," well, then that makes them want to bully you more. And then you can turn that around by saying, "Yes, my mom drives a garbage truck. She picks up all the trash that you don't want, you know, and she makes a good living. And, well, you're going to be a garbage truck driver when you grow up," that bully might say. And then you say, "Well, no, my mother's saving money so I can go to college. She doesn't want me to drive a garbage truck." So having a dialogue instead of reacting.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, I could see where that could go either way, just depending on who you're with and what their background is, why their motivation for bullying. You know, if they're angry kids, I don't know how reasoning is going to work, because it's just like, even with adults, it's the same kind of thing. We can't reason with everybody. So it's it's kind of a hit or miss.
It may work. I mean, it's just another solution that may be.
Right, exactly. It's something that kids can try.
Instead of reacting.
You know, right, rather than reacting, right. Because you can't just ignore these people. They will come at you and come at you and come at you. You just can't ignore it. It's a very difficult thing for children to do.
And my granddaughter says that maybe if it's on cyberbullying, take down your Facebook for a while. Just for a while, or put it up under another name for a while, until it dies down.
Right. I mean, my gosh, there have been, I think I can think of two cases where girls committed suicide because of the bullying, the cyberbullying that they received. And now pictures get sent around and all kinds of things. I mean, if a kid, especially high school kids, if they make a mistake, you know, and they take a picture of something that they shouldn't take a picture of, and that can get spread around, and they can be so humiliated by that. And kids just, they don't have the experience to know how to protect themselves, really. The things that maybe they shouldn't do. They're still, you know, we're still making mistakes until we, like I know Dr. Phil says, until we're 24, 25, our brain is not at a place where, you know, we can really, I can't think of the word, but not make these stupid childhood mistakes. So kids do things, and then they suffer the consequences for it. And now with cell phones and things like that, I mean, things get out instantly. I live in Florida, but I am originally from Baltimore, Maryland. And I know things that go on in Baltimore before people in Baltimore know it. Between Facebook and the phone and things like that, you know, it gets out so, so quickly. So that is a scary, scary aspect of bullying.
It is.
Yeah.
But good, too, because, you, like you said, you know things that are going on, and you can share pictures. And so there are good things about the Internet.
Right, right. There are good things. You just have to know how to protect yourself when you use it.
Yes.
What about kids who are being bullied because of physical disabilities? What do they do? How would they handle
There are stories in the book about that. There's a whole section about that. So there's a boy who had autism, and he couldn't organize his papers, and he couldn't do things right. And the teacher was actually bullying him and making an example of him in front of the class, and calling on him, knowing that he didn't have a certain assignment done, and not ever giving him a break. So that when the mother found out, she didn't know he had autism. She just knew that he had a lot of problems, and it'd been pointed out, you know, he was in special classes for this, and she ended up having to homeschool him. And then she found out that he actually did have some kind of autism. So she didn't realize it until she brought him home. So that actually helped her to take him out of school. And then she started teaching, having him learn to do some, ballroom dancing. And that actually helped with his disability.
So it worked out well for him because his mother was able to really observe what was going on.
Yeah.
You know, we rely on... I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I wanted to hear what you have to say.
There's a man called Chris Hendricks, and he had cerebral palsy. And when he was in school, the teachers actually pointed things out to the class, like it made him feel even more isolated. Like they would send him to the restroom, but they'd always send somebody with him. And he said that actually made it worse, and the kids actually acted like they were afraid of him because he couldn't walk the way they did. So now he goes around with a band. He plays music, and he talks to kids about bullying and how to treat other kids the same and don't isolate them and don't be afraid of them because they have a disability, but they need help. But he said kids would come up and knock his books out of his hand and do things to make his life harder. So
right. You know, and there are some schools that my sister actually works with mentally disabled kids in a public school system. And I know within her school system, and I've actually heard it in other school systems, the kids are actually embracing these kids. They're actually, some of them are working within these classrooms, helping these kids. And on many homecoming courts, they've been electing like Down syndrome girls and boys to be part of the homecoming court. So certain schools are doing really, really good work with this kind of thing. And
really
and it is. It's so great to see these kind of things. So great. Jill, we're about 35 minutes into the hour, and I want to give you an opportunity to really share what you want to share that maybe we haven't talked about, or, you know, talk about how people can get your book, or really I'm going to give you the floor for about 5 minutes, so go right ahead.
Well, I was going to tell about Daniel Joseph Baker, and he was a finalist, semi-finalist on America's Got Talent. And he was a little different, and kids from the first grade on were telling him that he was a girl, even though he was a boy, and he shouldn't play with the boys because he's a girl. And this went on through his whole school career. And he was a singer, and he wanted to get up in front of people and sing because he just really had this talent. And his mother was an opera singer, so she trained him. And when he went on America's Got Talent, it wasn't because he thought he had talent. It was because he knew that he had this gift, but he wanted to see if it was really a gift. And the bullying had kind of put him down, so he really didn't share this very much. And he was on the platform of America's Got Talent and talking about bullies and how they almost kept him from using his gifts. And now he's singing all over the place and enjoying it and realizing that the bullies didn't have power over him. Yes. And then I was going to tell about James Donaldson. And he is a NBA all-star basketball player. But in high school, he didn't realize he had the talent to play basketball. He was 7 foot tall, and he was trying to be inconspicuous going down the halls, and nobody could hide him anywhere because he was so tall, and he stood out. And when his coach decided he should play basketball, he was kind of all thumbs, his hands were too big, his feet were too big, he was awkward. And some of the kids started seeing that maybe he would be a basketball player, and they didn't want to lose their opportunity to shine as a basketball player, so they were bullying him. And they were doing things to him in the locker room, pinching him, pulling his towel off, and doing all kinds of things to upset him. He almost gave up on basketball because he just didn't want to face these kids every day. And his coach just kept helping him, and he blackened the windows on the gym so that James could go in there and practice without these boys. And it just kept going where he became successful. And he said that he almost let these bullies rule his life, and he wouldn't have had this opportunity. And he became an NBA All-Star. So there is hope, and there are people that are succeeding in spite of the bullying, and the people are becoming something with their life. And so you need to find your talent and what you're good at and go for that. And you don't even have to tell people you're doing it. Just succeed at something, and don't let these people keep you down.
Right.
Also,
right.
My website is jillvanderwood.com, VanderWood, and my book is available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, and it can be ordered from a bookstore. It's Erase the Problem of Bullying.
Perfect. Wow. Thank you. Thank you for sharing all those things. Yeah, you know, with the basketball player, I mean, his coach was his angel. Some adult, stood up for him and encouraged him. And I think it's pretty hard for a child to do that alone without some support. So it's really important that parents open their eyes. I mean, I'm a huge advocate for healthy parenting, and I think parents really need to pay attention to what their kids are going through and advocate for them. If your kid's upset about something, they're upset. It doesn't matter what the reason is. They're upset, and you need to address it and work through it. So that's one of my tender points. So what encouraged you to write this book, Jill?
It was a granddaughter who was being bullied at school, and she didn't want her name in the book, and she wanted her story in there, but she was afraid that she might have retaliation if she put her name in there. So she encouraged me to write this book. It was her idea, and when I started thinking about it and talking to her and then my other granddaughter that was cyberbullied, I decided that, yes, it is time for this book. And so I started writing it.
Right. It is time for this book. This is something I think everyone can relate to, and it's wonderful that you've written it. So Jill's book, Race the Problem of Bullying, Jill Vanderwood, she has stories from all different kinds of people who have been bullied, and she's got it set up by chapters for different types of bullying and different reasons for the bullying, religious bullying, things like that. So it's really a great, great book to read. And if you are out there, dealing with this with your children, I definitely recommend you get it, Race the Problem of Bullying, and just see how other people have dealt with it. And it's also really, really positive because it helps, gives you hope that you will get through this with your child. So anyway, Jill, I want to thank you so much. Our time is running out. Thank you so much for writing this book, sharing it with the public, and for being my guest today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Randy.
Appreciate it. Have a really wonderful day.
Okay, you too.
Thank you. Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye. So our time is up for today, but if you have any comments or questions about today's show or any other shows, please email me at loveyourlife@randygfine.com, RANDIGFINE.com. My website is also randygfine.com. Stop by, read my articles. There's links to everything that I do, all my shows. I've probably got about 200 shows now, and we're doing really, really well. So we've gotten over 106,000 listens, doing really, really well. Thank you for all your support. I appreciate that. And if you do enjoy listening to my shows, become a show follower. And the shows that I have coming up, I've talked about this before, but I have some of the most amazing people, and I'm not bragging, but they come to me. So they come to me, asking to be on my show, and I have some of the most amazing people that I would never meet in my lifetime, and I can fortunately bring them to you, people with just great stories, great talents, great abilities, all kinds of things, and also great advice on how you can live a better life. So becoming a show follower will keep you notified of all the shows that are coming up. All my shows are archived after broadcasting and can be listened to at your convenience on Blog Talk Radio, iTunes, or through the show links on my website. Thanks again for tuning in and listening to A Fine Time for Healing. This is Talk Radio show host, author, and Life Issues Counselor Randy Fine, signing off until next time. And if you're interested in my Life Issues Counseling, you can find information on randygfine.com. So this is Randy signing off until next time. May joy and serenity always be yours. Goodbye.
Thanks for listening. You can find out more about Randy at her website, randygfine.com. Join her next time for more of A Fine Time for Healing.
Hard not to hesitate, but we can't wait. Be the change. Be the change. Be the change. Be the change. There's a better way.